Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com.
For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events,
sign up now for TBIFN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBIGore.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and good evening from the Midwest. Today was a beautiful day, 86 degrees, and going to be our last like it for a while. So my husband, as many of you know, who is a government employee, got to go to work yesterday and got to drive back today so they could send him home. Actually, I guess that was yesterday. How time flies when you're on furlough. In any case, we went to the zoo today and we had a really good time, although I am stiff as a board and pretty tired, but grateful we were able to spend a beautiful day together because it's going to be dipping down in the 50s for the highs of the day on the weekend and the 30s in the evening. So we truly got to enjoy perhaps one of the last days of the season with the top down and October, 86 degrees. What more could you want? Great day. I want to thank you all for being here tonight. Again, I'm Kim Justice, your host. This is Brain Injury Radio Network. I want to remind everyone that Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, 10 different hosts, actually even more than that now that we've added the earlier platform 2 hours before this. But all of our shows are archived for on-demand listening immediately after the live interviews. So unlike many of us here who went a long time, I'll just use myself for a moment, 17 years it took me, 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to meet other brain injury survivors. And nowadays, nobody has to be alone in their recovery. Brain Injury Radio on 7 nights a week, the archives available 24/7. And I'd like to give you the website one more time for the caller hotline. Excuse me, I got a frog. 4PEER11.org. That's 4PEER11.org. Ultimately, this is going to be a 24/7 hotline where one survivor can talk to another. I think they're up to about 10 hours a day now and still looking for volunteers. It's only a commitment of 4 hours a month. So if you're looking for something to add a little dimension of purpose to your life, or you're just willing to be one survivor handing, sticking your hand out to another survivor, please check that out for Peer 1-1, whether you need to be one of the callers or you'd like to be one of the peers who speaks with the callers. And we would appreciate that. I want to thank my sponsor tonight, Lash Publishing, and I'm bringing that up. This has something to do with my guest, too, but I'm going to go ahead and put in the chat room, lapublishing.com. Lash Publishing, and that's like an eyelash, L-A-S-H, if you just want to Google it. But if you go to the Lash Publishing site, you look on the left column just a little ways down from the top, you'll see Brain Injury Journey. If you click on that, it'll take you to the page for the magazine that they launched this spring. It comes out 6 times a year. What you'll see at the top of the page is how you can get a subscription for the paper magazine, but they do have a free online version. So scroll down just a little bit, and it'll say, click here for the free online version. Let's see, the last one came out. We should have a new one coming out for October, November. But the July-August episode had an article by yours truly. But on the front of the August-September issue is what it was. So October-November is what will be coming out soon. Anyway, the lead story was called Concussion: From the Playing Field to the Classroom. And we'll be hearing a little bit more about that from our guest tonight. I was going to give everybody a chance to log in, but it looks like we can go ahead and start. I think that's all the housekeeping that I have for right now. We also want to thank Gordon Johnson of TBI Law for sponsoring Brain Injury Radio. If you have any litigation issues about your traumatic brain injury, check them out at tbilaw.com. Now, without further ado, I had such a good time talking to my guest that it was really hard to nail down a topic, a specific topic, because she knows so much about so many things, not only her own story, but her professional training blended with her personal experience. But Dr. Diane Roberts-Stoller is a neuropsychologist, board-certified health psychologist, board-certified sports psychologist, and trauma therapist with over 35 years of experience. She must have started when she was about 12. In 1990, Dr. Diane had a stroke while driving her car, resulting in a 60-mile-per-hour head-on auto collision. She has since undergone brain surgery and sustained 2 more concussions. From her experience and expertise, Dr. Diane wrote Coping with Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, The First Comprehensive Guide to Brain Trauma and Its Hidden Effects, due out November 5th, that's this November 5th, but now available for pre-order, and she'll tell us some details about that, is her new book, Coping with Concussion and Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, which includes information on sports and blast injuries. Dr. Diane's experiences have led her to devote her clinical practice, writings, and personal appearances to helping organizations and individuals overcome life's obstacles and achieve their goals. To hear more or to see more about Dr. Diane, simply go to her website, which is www.drdiane.com. I'll type that in the chat room in a minute if someone hasn't. We'll also have her tell us about her Facebook pages. This show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and survivors share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. Tune in, stop in, call in. This is a we program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the 4 A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Without any further ado, I'm going to hope that this is my guest, Dr. Diane Stoller. Are you with me?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Loud and clear.
Good.
I can hear you. Loud and clear. How are you doing today?
A little bit tired because, you know, I'm on the East Coast and it's 10 o'clock and it started a 9 o'clock workday.
Oh, geez.
So a little tired here.
Well, I understand. I didn't get up that early or work that hard today, although I will say walking the zoo and all of the fresh air kind of got to me, and I'm an hour behind you, but I don't think I've gotten that much exercise for a long time. We've got a huge zoo here in Omaha, and I hadn't been since last year, and boy, we just, well, I can only hope I walked my fanny off. I'm sure that's not going to be the case, but
I took a break today and drove up to the ocean and walked the beach, so I can, we had almost the same temperature. You had 86, we had 82 up here, and but we're not going to get as cold as you are. We're going to stay, I think, at around 70 tomorrow, so we're not dropping to the 30s yet.
Lucky you. Well, no, it'll be a high of 50. It'll just be the evening, so we'll go from today, which really got kind of hot with all the walking around, to probably the fireplace sometime over the weekend, and going to rain the next 3 days. So my husband's first 2 days of ... when will we come back to work, Mr. President, have been gorgeous days. And we've been blessed to go out to the wildlife park and to the zoo, and now we'll have 3 days of rain and cold weather and start our transition here in the Midwest. So, but anyway, I am so happy to have you on tonight as my guest. And
I'm happy to be here.
Well, I understand that Craig interviewed you quite some time ago. I was talking to him the other night about how excited I was to have you be coming on the show, and he's certainly familiar with you and your work, and was excited about your new book coming out.
I am excited. Matter of fact, I got the first copy, you know, that comes to the publishers. I was just talking to Barbara Hill before. We just got the first copy, and the publisher wrote to me saying, "Dear Diana, hot off the press copy of Coping with a Concussion looks great. Marissa Vigilante," and this is, so we got the first copies. Each one of us got our first copies of the upcoming book that's coming out on November 5th. So we're ecstatic. It is 378 pages, and it's just chocked with everything that everybody, to answer all the questions that everybody has been asking me for years, is in this book. So
great. Now, I just typed in your website in the chat room. Again, it's drdiane.com, but your book is going to be available, I suppose, at Amazon, your first book and your second book. Maybe tell us where your books are going to all be available.
They will be, yes, online at my website, which it is right now, and also on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at most, private bookstores. So it's, and at libraries throughout the country. So for people who cannot afford, to get anything online, is that these are always available in your library, too. So that, you know, is very important, because with this economy, not everybody can afford the book. So we make sure that it's in the libraries, too.
That's wonderful. That's just great. Now, tell me again, remind me, your time between, well, actually, maybe we'll back up for just a minute. No, let's not. change my mind. Forget that. Scratch that. Well, I was just wondering, I don't want to start in the middle of the story or anything. I do like to start at the beginning so we can kind of sequentially, you know, go through our interview. But what was the time between you writing these two books and maybe the, because we are going to go back and do some of your story, and I'm sure that's going to incorporate the information, but what gave you the impetus to write the first and then, yes, to the second?
Well, the first book came out in 1997. In 1994, every single one of my doctors in Massachusetts said I was permanently brain damaged, and I couldn't walk, talk. And so that's when I went home, cried, and then said, okay, doc, you're going to have to heal yourself. And the methods that I had been using and I knew about, because in my practice, I've always had an integrative team. So prior to my accident, I had, you know, the acupuncturist, the Reiki, the polarity. I had in my cognitive therapist, psychiatrist. So I had, that was part of my practice. So when knowing this, I then went to the polarity therapist and to the water therapist. And so then from there, I said, when I did get better, I said, I remember going up to York, Maine, and to the Cliff House and saying, what's my purpose? And, you know, there are many, many books that tell their personal stories. And Claudia Osborne's book had come out, Over My Head, at the time. And I decided to write literally a guide that would help people to recover like I did. And so that was the first book, Coping with Mild Traumatic Brain Injury. And since, but at that time, you know, MRIs were not really known, the different types of MRIs, because I know for myself, you know, they did a CAT scan on me, and, you know, they didn't do an MRI until much later. Many of the methods, the diagnostic methods, concussion, most people didn't even know. Even when I came, you know, after the book was out, for years, people did not realize that the word mild did not mean mild like a mild cold. That mild means how long you've been unconscious. And so people were shocked. And it was in one of my speeches. As a matter of fact, it was in, I think when I was in Nebraska, is that, you know, I asked the audience always to give me feedback. And everybody said, I didn't realize mild didn't mean mild, meaning like a mild cold. And so that's when I started explaining the mild means anybody who's unconscious from zero or not unconscious to, you know, an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then from an hour to 24 hours is moderate, and from 24 hours beyond that is called a coma. And so is most people didn't know that. Now, that term, mild traumatic brain injury, has been changed as, like, shell shock has now been used as PTSD, which is also in my book about post-traumatic stress, that mild traumatic brain injury is now called a concussion. And so, and that's very important. Now, the symptoms used to be called sequelae, and now they're called post-concussion syndrome, or PCS. So that was the big thing. So the first book came out, neurofeedback was just starting in its infancy. It was just kind of being used for ADD, partly a little bit for brain injury. And now there's a lot of research, double-blind research. There's a machine that really helps for sleep, the CES machine. Back then it was not known in 1997, even though it was known in Russia. But it was not known in the United States. So in 1997 is when the book came out, and it had, as I said, for every symptom from a brain injury, it had a chapter. It had the physical, the psychological, the cognitive, how to handle the financial, how to handle the family. But the biggest one that you and I were talking about that's in both books is the chapter on grief. Because, you know, we all have the sleep in the new book. I included sleep and sexual issues. It's expanded. Now, you know, there's the number of methods of getting diagnosed. But, you know, one of the things that if anybody out there who's had a accident, which includes insurance, that they have to prove they've had a concussion. Getting an SWI MRI, not a T3, T4, is essential. Having a DTI is essential. Having neuropsychs are essential to be held up in a court of law, and a quantitative EEG. So these are the things that were not in the first book that are now in the second book. But grieving is in both books because the one thing that you and I talked about was the loss of self. I mean, our own identity, who we were, you as a mother, you as a wife, you is how you perceived yourself. And when I usually give speeches, I usually have a very graphic drawing of a person being catapulted all of a sudden being from their 30s or 20s or whatever age to being an 80-year-old because, you know, when someone's in their 80s or 90s, people say, oh, I have memory problems or I have sleep problems or I have this joint problems. But you don't think of it being 80 years old when you're 20 or 30 or 16.
Right.
And, you know, the memory problems, the cognitive, the focusing problems, that, you know, the irritability. You know, you talk about grumpy old people, but, you know, and the fact is many of the people who are grumpy in their 80s and 90s are only because they've had some kind of brain injury.
Right,
Think about it. So people don't think about that, but it's that being catapulted, it's being shifted, and it's the loss of who we were. And as I said to you when we talked before, to me, there was a television show in Massachusetts that became national on PBS, which is This Old House. And I said that not only did we repair this old house, but it is a composite. So this is, there's ways that people have to deal in grieving the loss of self, which is essential to healing.
Right. Now let's go back. Thank you. And how long had you been practicing dealing with people? Obviously, you're a neuropsychologist. How long had you been in practice at the point that you had your accident?
Oh, I'm going to have to do my math now.
Okay.
I got my doctorate in 1977.
Okay.
And so if it was 1990, I'm going to do it. 1977. I was
quite a while.
About 23 years at the time that I was practicing. Did my math right? Nope. That was eight. That's eight. 13 years. Was 13 years at the time, and
in your career then.
Oh yeah, I had three at the time of my accident. I had three offices. Two corporations. I had seven therapists working for me, and I had, and that's actual, you know, psychotherapists. That was not all the, complementary medicines, which I told you, the polarity therapist, the acupuncturist, and I had over 265 patients at the time of my accident. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And
so,
I was already a professional speaker at that time. Yeah.
Wow. So you had quite a bit of experience working with people who had brain traumas and your team together and, like I said, solidly in your career. So tell us about the day or the evening, whichever it was. Tell us a little bit about when you became the therapist to the survivor.
Well, the big thing, and I'll get into the specifics, but the big thing that, you know, having talked to so many people over all these years since 1994 and 1997 and even prior to that, is not that my story is so unique. There are people's stories each person's story is so unique and how it's affected them, but the big difference is I figured out my program. I figured out how to get better. And
yes.
Consistently, I have been able to replicate that over and over and over again. And where the books, you know, are, should you say, for a generic person, this is where I get into the personally sitting down with people and saying, and customizing my program for them. So to answer your question, as part of my practice as a health psychologist, I work with terminal cancer patients. And I had a patient who was dying in Boston, and I had a patient sitting in my office who had a physical condition, a myoclonic disorder, movement disorder, and she was sitting in my office. It was 45 minutes away from Boston. I live 45 minutes north. And so I had left my patient in Boston, and I was driving home to my home office. And I remember singing. I remember the song. And the next thing I know, there's a policeman standing over me. And because what happened, I had a growth in my brain about the size of a walnut that had been, now we now know, bleeding for 10 years on and off. It bled out while I was driving. And
God.
Then I had the 60-mile-an-hour head-on. And then I was rushed to the hospital when they told me that, obviously, I had this growth in my brain. And then 5 months later, I had brain surgery. And so that was on March 5th. And the surgery was on August 9th. And in the interim, I will throw in one more little bit of tidbit, is
yes.
to keep me going, I wrote a spiritual suspense novel. And I couldn't remember anything. I could not remember everything. And thank God, I could not remember my name. I couldn't remember people. I couldn't remember. But I would get on that computer, and I couldn't, at that time, I could hold a pen in my hand, but I couldn't write. My speech was very halted. I couldn't speak. And
yes.
so, but I could sit on that computer and type, and the story literally poured through me. And it, the book is out. It's on my website. It's called Timeless, Who Am I? And it's
mm-hmm.
a spiritual suspense novel of talking about who, what is life and death. And the patient who I had gone to see in March, I had died in May. And so while I was waiting for, you know, my surgery, she had died. And
my
so
gosh.
it was my way of coping with my own accident, her death, that I had worked with this woman for 2.5 years, that she had been only given 3 months to live, and we worked for 2.5 years. And so that was in August of 1990. And then between 1990 and 1994 is when, you know, after 4 years, at that time, they did not know about neuroplasticity. They did not know that the brain can heal. And they said to me, as I said earlier, that I was permanently brain damaged, never, ever going to get better. And one person put his finger in my face and said, lady, you're permanently brain damaged, and you need to go to a therapist to learn how to cope with that.
God.
And and at home, I had three little children. My youngest was 6 years old. My two older were both 10 years old. And, probably seven, because they're 3 years apart, and
mm-hmm.
Is that, and I was devastated, and to realize that I couldn't be their mother, I couldn't remember things, and
mm-hmm.
that's, as I said, I mentioned, is when I decided to take everything I had ever known and just started from scratch trying to figure out a program which is, changing your diet is essential. Doing exercise, water therapy, and depending on what your injuries are.
Mm-hmm.
But mine was both physical because I had the which when you have multiple injuries within a short period of time, that is second impact syndrome. So each sequelae, each symptoms of post-concussion syndrome, are now not just one and one is two. They're geometric, so it's like three times three times three, so it's nine times worse. So by the time after the brain surgery, all the symptoms were nine times worse than originally from the original accident.
Wow.
So, and that is the part. So it was taking one after another, and in the accident, physically, I injured my optic nerve in my eye. I bit my tongue down the middle. When my husband had seen me in the hospital, he said, I always knew wife spoke with forked tongue. And is that I injured 4 cervical, 3 thoracic, 3 lumbar, both knees were blown out. And so, I mean, I lost the use of my whole right side. Now, I wasn't paralyzed, which would be a paralysis. I had hemiparesis, so that means one side was that I couldn't use it. And as I said, they told me I was never going to get better. And
yes.
if, you know, if anybody's seen 50 First Dates, I was like 10 minutes Tom. Is that if I met you, I would say, hi, how are you? And turn away. Oh, hi, how are you? And turn away. Hi, how are you?
Right.
And, you know, I wouldn't have even remembered we had this conversation.
Right.
So it took, you know, from 1994 to 96, the 2 years, to really start putting things, and that's when I started to realize that I could take my program that I was working on and started keeping notes of everything, and went to the publishers and found at that time Avery Publishing, and that now has been taken over by Penguin. But Avery took me on, and in 1997 the book was published.
Wow, that's really something. So you had such extensive injuries. Now, with the, you may not have remembered particulars, but with that established block of time that was your career, and I can't, it just makes me sick. I can't tell you how many times I've heard from our audience that they were told upon waking with whatever symptoms they were coming out with, the same thing, you know, this is what you're left with, this is what you're stuck with, deal with it, get used to it. The lack of any kind of hope for something better in the future, I've heard it so many times, it just makes me sick. But the part that gives me joy is that most people are like, not to the extent maybe that you have been, but they found that hope out of their own determination and life force that's driven them along. Now, was there a point where you thought that they might, where that you believed them?
Yes. The answer is absolutely. I sat there. After 2 years, remember in 1994, is that I had lost my practice. By 1992, I closed up my practice, and I could not see that I was going to be ever a psychologist again.
Right.
Or be a neuropsychologist, you know, and helping people. I was now being told that I couldn't function as a mother. I couldn't function very well as a wife. I had a lot of labileness where my moods would be, you know, erratic. And and I just really was despondent. There was no hope. Why should I? You know, I was ready to check out. And you know, when people ever talk about this, and people have with me, and I confront this. I said, if I had offed myself, if I had committed suicide, then I wouldn't be sitting on this radio show with you.
Right.
So, and I know the people I've helped. So. You know, when I sit with my patients and I say, look, I understand what you're feeling now. And yes, we're not going to minimize how despondent you're feeling. But the fact is most doctors and most people aren't aware about neuroplasticity and that the brain can heal and you can get back. And that it takes a while. And like in my case, because I have a hole in my brain, in my frontal lobe, I had to literally rewire, and how I kind of describe it to people. And and I'm going to have, hopefully in the next month or so, this wonderful video that's showing what it actually looks like of neuroplasticity and how the wires do it and the neurons do it. But basically how I describe it is going out into the country, cleaning. We're going to put a new house out there. And we're going to clear off the trees and the shrub, and now we're going to, you know, landscape it and put down the foundation and then build the house. And that's exactly what the brain is making, new neurons and new connections. And it can be done, and I keep on telling people I'm living proof of it, because not only did I have that in 1990, but in 2005 I got Lyme disease. And then I had another stroke. And then I got better from that. And then in 2008, a snowplow took off the front of my car, and I had another concussion. and I again had all the symptoms, because once you've had them, you're vulnerable. It's like, you know, if you have a bad back and you hit it again, well, it's a re-injuring of an injury. And I, thank goodness I have a good sense of humor, I turned to my staff and patients and said, I know someone wrote a good book on the subject. I'm going to follow her suggestions, and I'll be back. And so it...
and, now, I want to... Yeah. Before you... And I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt, but this is something that it seems to be hot off the press news, but about these repeated... well, either repeated concussions, repeated blows
yes.
to the head or trauma to the head, and
yes.
and how it exponentially kind of amplifies the traumatic effects, probably both physically and emotionally, I would think. So you just kind of were living it during the time that this evidence was coming out. In fact, it hadn't really even come out. It's
just been
fairly recently when they've been talking about cumulative effects. In the old days, I'm sure you remember that, you know, I give an example of, you know, I don't know, when I was a kid, probably 7 or 8, and was riding my bicycle down a hill, hit some gravel, skidded, flew over the handlebars, landed on my forehead, and got one of those goose eggs, we used to call them. And Mom would put a bag of ice on the goose egg, and they'd shine a flashlight in your eyes and not let you go to sleep. And that was the end of it. You know, when you were alive the next day and the swelling had gone down, that was the end of it. And you went on about your life. Nobody ever considered that that might have caused damage to your brain when it slammed up against your skull in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's, I'm going to talk about three different types. I'm going to make a little note on this for you.
Good.
Is that one is what you're talking about, and that is what, and that is the obvious, falling off the bike. What
mm-hmm.
most parents and most teachers is the kid who is on that same slide. The mom's sitting over there, and a kid goes down the slide, hits his head, and cuts his knee, and comes over to the mom showing the bloody knee, and the mother takes care of the bloody knee, not knowing that the kid had been knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're in pee-wee ball or whatever, and they get hit in the head, and the kid is now really knocked out again, they don't realize the kid has had now a second concussion because they didn't know about the first one.
Right, exactly. Now, I want to ask you one thing. Go on. But
okay.
Do you have to be unconscious? That's another thing I'm hearing these days, is that unconscious isn't a prerequisite to these concussions. Do I understand that wrong?
No, it is. Correct. What it is, it's causing, and this is what I was going to say, and you don't have to have, this is, I'm going to get to that one point in 1 second.
Okay, good.
The fact is, having a head injury doesn't mean you have a brain injury. And to have a brain injury, you don't have to have a head injury. And that is very, very crucial to most people because they don't realize it. I mean, if our brains and our skulls, the way it's designed, is our brain is like soft custard, and it has the fluid around it, and it's like I equate it to putting like custard in a bag of some fluid, and then having a nylon stocking around it, and then you have some more layers, and then you have the skull, and then you have your scalp, and then you have your hair, and if you think about it, if our brain and our head, our physical head, skull, is
right.
Built. So that you, as fast as you could run into a tree, like think of it like a billy goat runs into a, you know, another billy
yes.
goat. They don't get
mm-hmm.
they don't get brain injuries. Okay, we are designed that we could run as fast as we can run into a tree, and we could get a goose egg on the outside of the skull, but that doesn't mean we have a brain injury. Okay,
mm-hmm.
but when we get on our bicycles, when we get on rollerblading, when we get on skiing, when we're going, you know, you know, in other sports, okay, we're now in a powerboat, or we're going on a, you know, a snowmobile. We're now
right.
going faster than we could ever run.
Yes.
And that if you have the jolting, like in a whiplash,
mm-hmm.
where you're not hitting the head, but the actual brain is actually moving inside the skull, you're getting a brain injury without having a head injury, an
right.
actual injury to the skull. So so that's been very important. And so the fact is now, once the brain is made up of electrical and vascular, if the electrical system, it causes a dysregulation in the electrical system, this is what it is, and if a dysregulation causes you to go in an unconsciousness, meaning if the specific brainwave, delta wave, kicks in, that's the unconsciousness, that's your sleep wave, and that's why you go unconscious. But you
mm-hmm.
could have just enough of a dysregulation causing dysregulation and just have a little bit of just a daze and having a little bit of increase of delta waves. So you're still aware, but you're still foggy because it's a little bit, you know, like, you know, because you're getting the alpha, the theta waves, which is the kind of introspection. You're into your head, and that what a lot of people call the foggy brain. You know,
yes.
if you talk to most people, almost if you go across the board, people with strokes, with brain injury, you know, you will hear this one thing. They'll say, it's like my, I like a cotton brain, you know. And the best way I equate to it is when someone, if they've been really drunk ever in their life, and they say, oh, I've had too much, I can't think. My brain doesn't seem like it's functioning. We have that drunk brain. That's basically
right.
it. We have that. And so what that is, it's a dysregulation of the electrical system and the neural
mm-hmm.
connections. So that's what we now can see, the difference. So
yes.
it is, you can have a slight, not totally being unconscious, it could be briefly, but it's usually by the Congress, they say brief, but at least from a few seconds to an hour. Yeah.
So you know, it's interesting when you gave the example that you did, and I've told a couple doctors, not like yourself, but traditional and internist and a neurologist, and they both looked at me blank. I don't know if it's because the Midwest is the last to get information or or they don't read, you know, they don't do their continuing education credits. But, you know, back when I was 35 when I had my ruptured brain aneurysm, but when I was 17, the summer between high school and college, I was horseback riding, and the horse was, I didn't know the terminology until later, barn crazy. When you rent
right.
horses, apparently they know when they're on their way back. And this
oh,
thing
absolutely.
Bolted. Now, I stayed on, and I was holding those reins tight, pulling its head all the way back. But I also didn't know that they could get the bit in their teeth, and it doesn't matter how hard you pull, they'll keep going. Well, of course, instead of going on the path, the horse knew he was going home, so he started cutting through, and we were on a very large bluff. It was horseback riding through these forests and bluffs, and the horse started going through the bluff, and the branches were smacking me, you know, in the head and tearing my clothes, and I was getting beat up, and my mind said, get off. You know, you've got to get off this. You're going to get hurt. Well, the horse was running, you know, as fast as it could to get back. And I somehow, I guess, thought I was going to jump off. But I landed on my hip and it snapped my femur. And I went rolling, bouncing down this bluff and landed at the bottom of this bluff.
That's awful.
Well, you know, nobody ever asked me because the obvious was this broken femur. But
that's what I was telling you, like
that was your
knee
example
on that little kid. yeah
nobody ever. And when I tell them now, because I understand it may be important for them to know history, and that my history, but just from being here for a year and talking to people like you, I find out that I have more history, like puzzle pieces that actually, you know, they belonged in the same pile or they fit together. And as I'm, last time I went in for a physical, you know, after the holidays or sometime maybe in early spring, you know, I came out with these revelations of, you know, these things that I had learned, and they, you know, and he just kind of looked at me and said, yeah. And then he went on to the next thing, and that was just kind of the end of it. But it's interesting. It does make you wonder, you know, when you say that you have, a lot of times the head is overlooked, if there's, or the brain even is overlooked, because I was obviously quite dazed and I'm sure lost consciousness. I was with a boyfriend and it took him a long time to find me because at the time my horse took off and then I decided to bail and roll down the bluff. They were all looking up there and I was down here, and you know, there's parts of that I don't remember. And
and the key also is back then when you were 17, there wasn't an MRI, and
no.
And the MRIs that they did have and still do have, and which most people, because when most people go in with a concussion, a brain injury, other than the aneurysms like you and I had, but even our aneurysms, you know, they might have been, did a CAT scan, but is the CAT scan does not pick up a concussion. A MRI T3, T4 does not pick up a concussion because it's picking up the elephant in the room, not the mouse. And concussions, the changes in the tears and the stretching is like the mouse, it's there. And on an SWI, you can see it. So on an SWI, MRI, that is what people need if they have to prove they've had a concussion in a court of law. And the DTIs shows the white matter. And many times that the injuries are not to the gray matter, but to the white matter, which is the connective areas connecting the different you know, the lobes of the brain. So that's
right.
Your connectivity. And the only way you can see the tears and the, and so, you know, that's why for many, many years, all the neurologists said that we were all malingering.
Yeah.
We were making this up and
yes.
That we were just complaining because they could not prove it on the diagnostic methods that they were using.
Right. Now,
so
what about...
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say now, yes, yes, that's a given, that, yes. But now there's a few of us, myself and our Tuesday night host and possibly yourself, I'm trying to remember when your surgery was, but we have, Les Paul and I both have metal in our head, the type of metal clip that I was told I could never have an MRI again back when I was 35.
So if you can't have an MRI, see, then what you can have is, like, I did not have the clip, so I can have an MRI, and I have an MRI every year, and I think I told you recently that I have
right.
a brain tumor and that we're looking at. But is that you can get a quantitative EEG, which will show you how you're functioning. Now, that I was starting to tell you about. See, you can't do an fMRI because you're still dealing with that, but you can with some of the other scans get an idea of the damage. But in a functional a quantitative EEG, what it does, it's showing the function of the brain. It's not going to show necessarily the structure where your tear or like the SWI, which shows structure. The
right.
SWI and DTI show structure, but what we are all wanting is what is functioning in our brain. So having a neuropsych testing and with somebody who really has some background in brain injury, because if their background's only with ADD or learning disabilities, dyslexia, they're not going to have the proper testing that is needed for a brain injury. So that's very important. But the quantitative EEG does hold up. Both of these, the neuropsych testing and the quantitative EEG, hold up in a court of law and gives the an individual the information of where their brain is functioning. So if you're having too much, remember I told you about that delta wave in your frontal lobe, then you're always foggy and tired. If you're having too much alpha wave in your frontal lobes, you know, that's right behind your forehead, you might be depressed. And or if you're not having enough delta waves in the back of your head and you're not getting good restorative sleep. Because one of the things, you know, that is crucial in recovery is having restorative sleep. And I spent, you know, I went to great lengths to have this chapter on sleep, on knowing how many times you go from REMing to non-REM. Because when you in restorative sleep, you're going to be doing like 5 cycles in your 8 hours. And in those 5 cycles, you if you can think of it like a bridge, okay, and that needs to be repaired. You have to stop the traffic. So you can repair the bridge, then you let the traffic go on, then you, because, you know, traffic's got to go, and then you stop all the traffic in, repair, let the traffic go. Well, anybody who has a dog knows what I'm talking about. That dog, when they are in non-REM sleep, that dog is like lead weight. You can't move its limbs, you can't do anything, it's just dead weight. Because what the brain does, it literally shuts off all your limbs. It's like a paralysis. And what it's doing is repairing the brain and essential areas like your heart. And that is what it's doing. It's offline on all the peripheral areas of the brain, of the body. Mm-hmm. Then goes online. And anybody seeing a dog, because the dogs are better than cats on this one, is you'll see their eyes roll up and they're chasing something.
Yes.
And that's when we talk about we're having our REMs. That's when we're dreaming. The dog dreams, we dream. And then we go, and that's where the traffic's going. And it's integrating. Mm-hmm. And this is where theories of, you know, the great theories and architectural designs and all this, people talk about dreams. And then we go offline again. And you must go through these cycles, at least 5 or 6 of them, over the 7 to 8 hours sleep. And that is considered restorative sleep. And if you don't, and I have this, you know, wonderful chapter and all the graphs. And during that time is the changes in the neurotransmitters and neuromodulators. So you have to have GABA at a certain time. So all these things are so important. And if you don't get restorative sleep, your brain will never heal.
I was going to say, well, yeah, I haven't gotten restorative sleep for most of the time in that 17 years, and I've talked to the doctor about it, and I did go in for one sleep study a long time. I swear I didn't sleep. I was very uncomfortable being there, for one thing. I got a little hospital phobic after brain surgery. I don't know what it is, a psychological thing.
Oh, I know about that, yeah.
Yeah, just don't like
it
very much.
I got something that's going to help you and others. And again, it's in the book, but you can go online and look this out. The CES machine, CES is cranial electrostimulation. It was designed in Russia in the 1950s, and this has been double blind. This is FDA. It is an FDA medical device. It is considered a medical instrument. Again, you know, they can go and do the Google on this.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, and there's three. The original designer was AlphaStim, and I call that like the Rolls Royce. It has all the birds and whistles, about, you know, everything you could ever want, and it's very expensive. It's about $1,500. Then Mind Alive has one out for about $400. And Health Directions has it for $250. Do they all do the same? Yes. Just as the Kia can drive as well as the Rolls Royce. You know, and But the thing is, it is designed, FDA approved, for depression, anxiety, and insomnia. And it really does help in sleep.
No kidding. Now,
absolutely.
Are you guessing that that would be, I'm typing in the chat room, when you said health directions, are you going to maybe assume that that's healthdirections.com, do you think?
I think so. I have their product on my website because most people cannot afford the other two.
Right, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
You know, I tell people, and there are some of my patients who really want the Rolls Royce, and I say, look, I will call Alpha Stim for you, and I will try to get a discount price other than what's on the their website. And same thing with Mind Alive. I've talked to these people since the 1997, and I can get a discount price, but I don't sell that because of, you know, most people can't afford $400 or, $1,500. You know, that is not covered by insurance.
Right.
I mean,
would you call this a sleep aid? It's not one of those masks, is it? Like when you
No, it's not sleep. What it does, it literally puts out a frequency, a specific frequency that tells the brain, I call it, one of my medical term, I call it the shush machine. It goes, shh, go to sleep, relax. It's now time to just chill out. And it is also used for pain management. And when I give my lectures and give my speeches, what I usually do is I ask for at least three people who are having, you know, anxious, and then I get three people who are telling me they're in pain, and then I wire them up, and I go and give my speech, and then half an hour later I said, okay, what's your level of anxiety? What's your level of pain? And, you know, most people say, oh my God, this is better than any pills I've ever taken.
Wow.
Obviously, yeah, but for my patients who have sleep problems, they use it before going to bed. There's some other methods. Again, it's in the book, the P. Roshi, that's on roshi.com. And all these are in the book, giving the websites of every the different companies. Like in each chapter, that's what I'm saying. So if you're having problems on memory, there's all, you know, there's the conventional methods, there's complementary methods, and then alternative methods for every single symptom of a brain injury. So
okay.
From health issues to cognitive to emotional to personalities, I get in, because I'm a trauma therapist, I have a whole huge chapter on PTSD and the fact that this is a little bit of trivia, but is that I was there at 9/11 for the United Air crew to help them, you know, get on the planes. So because I'm, you know,
involved
with the Disaster Relief Network here in the Boston area, and another one which most people aren't aware of, not so much in the Midwest, but is that for all the people that were at the Boston Marathon. Within
mm-hmm.
1/4 mile, 20,000 people had a concussion from the blast injury, and they do not know it yet.
Wow.
They do not know it yet because it's not even 6 months, and what most people are dealing with is the physical injuries, right? And then they're dealing with the trauma of being there, the PTSD part. But then they're going to be, as things kind of abate, they're going to be still having the memory problems, the dizziness, the ringing in the ears. That is part of a concussion from a blast injury.
Right.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
On your site, you talk about, and for those who maybe haven't gone there yet, I did type it in the chat room, but Dr. D-R-D-I-A-N-E, drdiane.com, just has a fascinating site. I was looking through. What it says is, have you or your family been diagnosed with a concussion, brain injury, blast injury, stroke or aneurysm, TBI, ADD, ADHD, MS, Parkinson's disease, anxiety, or PTSD, and still have the following symptoms? And then she's got a cool, scroller bar. I don't know what you would call it, but she breaks it down, you break it down to physical issues, cognitive issues, emotional issues, and behavioral issues. So another thing, you know, to keep in mind here is, you know, sometimes I make a joke, you know, first it was a physical injury for me. And then, you know, when I got through that initial most of the year having the more obvious improvement that I was going to have, you know, I was having emotional issues. Well, PTSD issues from some things earlier in my life, and then that didn't help it. Let's put it that way. That shock
that's
of getting,
right. That's right.
You know, life pulled out from under me. But, you know, when I would go to the doctor, and it was never suggested that I see a neurosurgeon, and because I was just, I had just had a physical and, you know, come out clean 2 weeks before, and then my brain pops 2 weeks later. And luckily, we had a visiting neurosurgeon in town. Micro neurosurgical techniques were relatively new, at least around here, and he was teaching all those who should know how to do such things here, that procedure. And it came up, I suppose he was doing a cartwheel when my case came up, because it was just the kind of thing, you know, that filled his surgical theater. And when I talked to him, so I didn't have, and my internist misdiagnosed me, so I never went back to him. My confidence was completely undermined with him. And so I kind of fell through the cracks at a time where it was easy to do. You know, my family did, I was single, my family didn't know what to do. None of us were given a handbook when I got discharged as to what to expect or what to do about it. But, you know, when I talked to this surgeon before he released me, which was, you know, in that first year, relatively quick, I think he only saw me, what, 3 or 4 times, see that my incision was, you know, getting fixed and that I knew what my name was and I was walking and talking and all that. And I felt so invalidated from the place that, you know, from the new internist I wound up getting probably a year later when I got a cold or something. I figured I was going to need a new internist. So I got, you know, brought my file, which I don't know that they look at unless something comes up, but he was aware I had had that go on. And the surgeon, you know, I would tell them about the mood swings and the extreme fatigue, you know, that I would get, and just, you know, like a lot of us of a certain age anyway, we were sun goddesses back in the day, and I could sit out for hours getting tan, and now just being out in the heat, even like today, you know, with the extra physical exertion and the sun out, I was starting to feel really sick and tired, and I won't say dizzy, vertigo like I do get in other cases, but just like I had to keep my hat on the whole time, but I needed to take my hat off. I needed the air, you know. It was like my brain was microwaving or something in there, so I had to sit out for a little while in the shade and get hydrated, and it's just, my point was just going back to the way you break down these four things. Finally, circumstances unrolled in my life where I did wind up going to what I call getting relegated to the shrink boneyard, where I threw myself to this man, and I loved him. I'm Italian and Irish, and I happened to get the draw of an old-fashioned mom-and-pop kind of shrink shop, where this was an East Coast Italian, and he was so good to me. He was the first one, you know, whoever validated me and told me, I noticed one of the things you put on emotional issues is fear of going crazy. Well,
right.
Since I had told all these professional doctors, now it was grandma's generation that thought they were all gods, I didn't think that, but I did I was powerless over something I knew nothing about, and I was trusting and relying on them. And when they weren't validating what I was telling them, I was half crazy by the time I got to Dr. O. And that fear of going crazy, that's what was going on when I went into him is, you know, I told him this physical, I had a ruptured brain aneurysm a little over a year and a half ago. I've got da-da-da, I give him the laundry list of all of my residuals, and these doctors aren't, they keep pelting me with pills and shit, you know, it's just, but they're not working, they're eating out my stomach lining, and I'm still having these problems, you know, they can give me a sleep thing, but I don't wake up with that restorative stuff you were talking about, and so,
right.
You know, it isn't just a physical or an emotional or a cognitive. I like the way you blend these symptoms because they do go together. It isn't just any one thing, but
and
it also wasn't that I was just crazy either.
No,
I was physically hurt.
And this is also why I look at, I have a five-prong approach that looks at the physical, the psychological, the emotional, the spiritual, and energy, because, you know, having been trained in energy psychology, and understanding chi and reiki, and understanding that not only the physically, you know, people forget that given the same injury, that, you know, I say the difference between the chihuahua getting hit in the head and the Newfoundland getting hit in the head, there is a very big difference, and
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, the hit in the head's the same, but we are talking about how the animal or the person and the temperament, some people, it affects more. And, you know, and also if you have a family history, if you had a prior family history of all having coping problems, or like you were saying
yes.
yourself, you had a history of some trauma. And so,
mm-hmm.
therefore, now this trauma, again, is not one and one is two. Your body is now saying it is now exponential. So, you know, now you're going back to the brain waves again. You're now going that, because in the word traumatic brain injury, there's
mm-hmm.
the word trauma. And so is that you see an increase of delta waves, which is causing that spacing or disassociation that most people think of, and the hypervigilance. So, you know,
yes.
people, you know, the filtering, the lights are brighter, the sounds are things. We're waiting for the next thing to happen again. And so you're always on edge.
Right.
And, I mean, I have one patient who comes in, I have to turn down the lights, or virtually do it in candlelight. And my office is literally so quiet. I mean, it's a very quiet atmosphere because you don't have, you can't be talking on the phone and then working with them. I mean, it is a very quiet atmosphere, and people don't understand that. You know, you're out with people, and you say, I went to a family wedding, and everybody's sitting at the hall and they're dancing, and I said, no, I had to sit out and. Outside, I could not handle the loud noise, the music,
mm-hmm.
and all the people
right.
talking. And I wanted to be at the wedding, and they put up with me. They put a table on the outside, so I ate by myself.
In a
but,
bubble. The doctor
yeah.
in a bubble.
That's right. But
tell
it
me,
is very
then,
hard, because, you know, what
on.
You were talking about. And this is why, you know, and most people do not look at how the past of that person who got injured and how many injuries has that person had.
Right.
And, you know, and then also I, you know, when we talked on the phone before is also what you're eating directly affects how that brain is healing, because certain foods exacerbate the brain injury. And that's why I have brain diets. If you go on my website, you know, on my website up in resources, it says brain recipes. These are foods that absolutely will help the brain heal and not cause more of this fogginess. And I personally have all my patients who come into me have to go on my brain diet, and they joke, they call it the brain diet from hell, but is that because you're taking that away, you're taking that away. But then all of a sudden they come back and say, but I can think now. Oh, my gosh, I'm focused now. I mean, yeah, it's what you're eating, the exercise, getting the restorative sleep, and then these other methods, you know, depending on your symptom, from the cognitive, getting the neurofeedback, or getting cognitive therapy, or getting water therapy, or Reiki therapy, or massage therapy, you know, depending on what, acupuncture, hyperbaric, mm-hmm. you and I talked about, remember?
Yes.
Many states, it is covered by insurance. I highly recommend it, but the fact mm-hmm. that so many other states, you know, I think you said in your state,
not
in my
here.
State, you, not yeah. here. Nope.
Nope.
You had a question you were going to ask me. Go ahead.
This has been a question I've been asking a lot of people lately, but I noticed you had it on here, and so it seems to be common, and it makes me mad because it's so nonsensical. You know, I am a more qualitative than quantitative type person, but it bothers me, this concept, and under the emotional issues of, why do so many of us feel guilt and shame because we can't perform or be who we were before, or can't remember all the things that we would or do feel guilt and shame about at some course in our recovery? Why do you think that is, when we were stricken with something that we couldn't help, that we'd put that on ourselves?
Well, one is that there's a lot of issues because of the brain injury, we're not aware we have a brain injury. And then we wonder why we can't think that way, or why can't we figure out something. And we haven't we can grieve that our pet dies. We can grieve that our relative died. But it's hard to accept that part of us has died. That, you know, it may recover, but it still may not recover the way we want. And the big key is that, you know, people look at you and they say, you don't look like you got a brain
exactly.
injury.
Exactly.
And I remember going to Columbus, Ohio. I was speaking in Columbus, Ohio, and being on a television show, and the host had heard about the extent of my injuries, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I come in, and she says, you don't look like you have a brain injury. I said, excuse me, do you want me to drool for you? I mean, is most people, you know, yes, I have patients who have severe brain injuries, who've been in comas for 9 months. And yes, do some of them are drooling? Yes. And, you know, they are upset they're drooling and all that. But the majority of us with brain injuries, strokes, MS, Parkinson's, we don't drool. We don't look different than anybody else. And yet, you know, they expect... And you say to someone, oh, I have a brain injury. And as soon as you say that, then they think somehow that we have a developmental challenge. No,
yes.
It's not we have a developmental is that I can't remember something right now. And then if you say that one, they say, oh, I can't remember something either. And now
yes.
we're getting into, you know, a whole other subject.
Right.
And so, yeah, is that... You know, you say, oh, I can't remember my keys. Oh, I can't either. You know, I'm getting older. Maybe it's because
yes.
you're getting older. No, it's I injured my brain.
Yes.
Then they'll say, well, do you think I injured my brain? I don't know if you injured your brain. I know I injured my brain.
Yeah, I get that from my family now, you know, getting called a space off. Why don't I use my head for something other than a hat rack? You know, why don't I pay attention? You know, I try to.
And it's as if we could do it. See, that's the big thing.
Right.
They talk, it's like it's a conscious decision to remember something. No, with a brain injury, you don't remember.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's so hard to describe that you really don't remember. And one of the things that makes it worse for me, and I use an acronym, HALT, when I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, that exacerbates. Or if I'm agitated about something else, maybe something's going on. You know, I put one of my dogs down last October, and a couple months later had a friend who actually indirectly brought me here. She was one of the first stones on the path that brought me this direction. She died, and I was there when I believe she was having her transition meeting, if you will, starting to get a glimpse of the other side. And I had had a near-death experience, and so I felt like I knew what she was seeing. And I felt on a spiritual plane like what was going on, that process was normal. But on a human plane, it triggered, I don't know, a lot of things. You're the doctor. It triggered a lot of things, you know, the human grief part, just the being there, you know, with someone who is so different than how they appeared before. And a lot of us are walking around and we don't appear different than we were before, and people think we can help it, you know, this forgetting and these sorts of things that I was talking about. I tried on a pair of shoes the other day, I'm sorry, in a waiting line. My husband was in the endless waiting line, and so I'm getting summoned by impulse items, and I set my phone down to try on these little shoes that fold up and go in a tiny, minuscule bag, so that if you can wear pumps anymore, you know, and your feet got tired, you could put these things on. Well, then we went clear across the city to this wildlife park. Well, I left my phone up on that thing where the shoes were, and I didn't know it for a couple hours until I went to check my messages. I'm one of those who's not married to my phone. I can't, when I'm out, if I'm out with you and we're having lunch, I have my phone off and in my purse. I can't do that, both of you at the same time. I'm also a little older and grown up in a different culture. I want to give you my attention. You know, it's just that we call that manners back one day. You know? You know, you actually pay attention to the people that are in front of you, to real life as it's happening right now. And, you know, I go back from a time in business where we had while you were out pads. Do you remember the pink while you were out? And so now it blows me away when people are doing all this multitasking, and I think, you know, sometimes I'm just entertained by it, and it depends, you know, like I say, on this, the state of my sleep, or, you know, the hungry, angry, lonely, tired, the anxiety level, what else might be feeding my beast as to with how much vigor I'm going to react. You know, on some days I might be able to wear life as a loose garment and just shrug something off that I would find really upsetting on another day, almost enough to make me have to go, you know, like in a dark room, get rid of all that noise, like you were talking about, all the confusion. Some people are going to laugh who've heard an old story, and I'm not going to tell it again, but this eye mask that I have that's cool and silk, and just shut the world out, you know, so it'll stop.
Well, you know, some of the things that you're talking about, barometric pressure really affects the brain. You know, if you remember the days when you were in high school and they showed you, you know, the ball and they pushed on that little rubber thing, well, you forget that our brain is like soft custard again. And so when there is the changes in barometric pressure, or if you go up in a plane, or you know, is that that's affecting your brain, and so that, and then you have the hormones. You know, you have to remember our hormones, and then I keep going back to that food, that diet, and if you have one of the symptoms of the emotional labileness, which is on the website, is that is when you don't have the ability, when you get angry, you get very angry. And so all of a sudden or you get crying when you didn't think you would cry, or that you get happy and you're giddy more than, you know, it's almost, again, it's like someone who's been drunk and who would, you know, when they get drunk, they can be a nasty drunk or they can be a happy drunk. Well, is these ability to modulate your moods. And so and then you do get fatigue. So a lot of the things that you're talking about, you know, and then obviously the memory can be because of any of these things. So it's so getting that good food and exercise and sleep.
Now, I'm not going to make you tell any more about the book, and we're going to wind it up and take some questions because I know you're
right
on the East Coast and we'll be going
yeah,
here
an hour
and a half.
Over here.
I know, I'll hurry, and I'm not going to give this out, but just give me a couple of foods that are good for the brain and a couple of things that are not so good for the brain.
Okay, great for the brain. If nothing else that everybody's going to remember, protein, protein, protein. What's the word?
Protein.
What's the word? That's it.
Protein.
So you want to, now, and because we the injury to our brain causes inflammation, we want to get the proteins that are high in omega-3s, not omega-6s. So you want to do your wild sockeye salmon. Do not do farm salmon. Farm salmon has squat in of omega-3s.
Yep.
You want to do your sardines. You want to do your spinach. You want to do walnuts. Look at a little walnut. It looks like a little brain. You want to do you can do for berries, you can do strawberries, all your berries, you can do your melons. What you don't want to have is sugar. Cane sugar can be made into rum. You're drinking alcohol every time you eat that. It's very bad. Artificial sweeteners are very bad because they should never be on there. Giving atypical migraines and migraines. So many symptoms that people don't know is from atypical migraines. Potatoes. What's white potatoes? Vodka. You don't want to do rice because it's sake. So you're drinking. Every time you have your white rice, you are now drinking a glass of sake. And think about how much you would feel if you had a bottle of sake. You're confused. Corn. How about corn? Corn, that's whiskey. So these are the things that absolutely, totally affects, your brain. So
now, that's nothing
chocolate,
to tell a girl from the Cornhusker state, but okay, I'm with you.
I know that. But if they don't have a brain injury, they can do it. But, and dark chocolate, yes, we got to have our dark chocolate. Not milk chocolate,
please.
Dark chocolate. Yes.
Right. Tell me, wait, before you go, because I've taken a note on a couple of these. Was it the good ones were the threes or the six on the omegas?
The threes, the omega-3s.
Okay.
So you want to get your, you can do legumes, you can do, if your brain injury is older like yours, you can have some of the omega-6s. But if someone just had a recent concussion or an aneurysm or MS, cause don't forget. And please, I tell people, check online. You'll see omega-6s when you're dealing with inflammation, and that's including injuries to the body. If you've been injured in that auto accident, is the omega-6s add to the inflammation, where the omega-3s are what help is an anti-inflammatory. So that's very important.
Okay, great. Folks, the number here.
Is there any questions that someone like to ask?
Yeah, I actually have a couple up, and I just wanted to say the number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. Please remember, Dr. Stoller is on East Coast time and tired today, so try to keep your questions to the point. It's my fault. I've just found this. Every time I talk to her, the few times we've gotten to talk, there's just so many interests. She's such a wealth of them. Anyway, I'm going to shut up. And area code 202, you've been patiently waiting, but I'm trying to get your microphone to go live. I believe this is Allie.
It is most certainly Allie. Good evening, everyone. Good evening.
Hi,
Dr. Diane, thank you so very much, and welcome to the show. Kim, you always bring it. I am so eternally grateful for the opportunity to literally just absorb all this phenomenal information. I am a multiple mild traumatic brain injury survivor. I've had 6 concussions, the first of which was when I was 3. So I had 3 years old, 4 years old, 8 years old, 3, 4, 8. I was like 12 years old. Then I was 17 years old. Then I was 20. And my last brain injury was sustained during a motor vehicle accident where I almost went through the windshield. And it was that injury that caused the most marked change in my cognitive functioning to the degree. Because when I was 3, I mean, what kind of baseline are you going to use, you know, for a 3-year-old? And, again, I'm in my 40s, so when all of this happened, this was pre, you know, all of this brain science awareness and that kind of thing. And although it's an unfortunate occurrence, I'm very grateful to the returning veterans of the Afghanistan and Iraqi wars, as well as the NFLers who've retired that have contributed to this incredible body of research and knowledge and awareness now. And I guess what I'd like to share is the fact that you touched on so many incredible things. I'm absolutely getting your book because it's almost like this is what I've been looking for so long. And of myself, I can do a lot, but I can't fix my challenges. And I'm not looking to completely eradicate, you know, the symptomatology or whatever the case may be. I know that I'm going to always have challenges throughout my lifespan as a result of having had these head injuries. And I've accepted that. And I have settled to a point of, I'll just leave it at that, acceptance. I'm not really comfortable with it, but there are days when I'm more comfortable than not. However, I noticed that I tend to, I almost feel like I don't know where to go because there's so many bing, bing, bings going off in my head. I had so many aha moments. Just to kind of go down the list of some things I wanted to share with you, let's see. I mentioned about the fact, are you there?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I share. Where are you located, by the way? I'm on the East Coast.
I'm north of Boston. But the wonderful thing with, as you were now on the phone, I also do Skype. So, you know, I Skype all over the world. So it is wonderful.
Oh my gosh.
This is the new world. That,
yes,
you know, I have patients in New Zealand, and I have a patient. I had a Parkinson patient in London, and the joke is that I would go from London to Nashville, and you know, different language.
In a matter of minutes.
I just put your phone number in, Dr. Stoller, 1-800-500-9971. Now, a person can call in there to discuss a consultation with you that way, and then do you kind of work out the Skype thing after someone calls into the number?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Allie, you can finish
you'll be
up
here. You'll be hearing from me. Okay, I'll start to wrap it up. Dr. Stoller, you'll be hearing from me. I'm currently here on the East Coast as well in the D.C. area, and I've been at NRH, which is a great hospital, for the past 4 years as an outpatient. However, I'm not seeing any improvement with regard to my ability to have compensatory strategies that will allow me to function better in my day-to-day life. My ADLs are lacking. Activities of daily living, for those who may not know what that is, are I struggle on a daily basis, and I'm not able to manage my life. And the fact that I don't look like, sound like, talk like, walk like, often think like I'm a person who lives with the after effects of having had multiple concussions, i.e. brain injury survivor, oftentimes I catch a lot of heat, and oftentimes it's unintentional. People don't know, but it makes navigating my world that much more difficult because I'm navigating the world with a hidden disability. And let's see, the fact that I've been so medication resistant to just a whole cornucopia of psychotropic meds makes total sense. I mean, and at the time, I mean, I'm talking decades ago, I theorized all of this stuff, and I'm thinking, well, you know, what if in the event this is not a neurochemical imbalance? What if this is structural organic? How about that? And, again, this was before all of this awareness has unfolded in the way of brain science. However, I would imagine, to the untrained eye or to the eye that's not as sensitively attuned to what does concussion look like or what do a number of brain injuries look like that happen to be atypical, I would imagine people might think, okay, well, yeah, she lives with bipolar disorder. And Kim, like you, I live with a mood regulation disorder, mood lability. I really struggle with that. And so I often will vacillate between, like, the polarities of having this perennial sense of buoyant optimism and, you know, life is just too hard. I can't make it work. I can't figure out how to just, you know, do life because I feel like I'm drinking from a fire hose and I'm going under.
Allie, I'm going to ask you, what's the question? You have a question and I have some
answers. Oh, I apologize. Thank you. Okay, question would be, okay, I'm currently on disability, okay, and I have not worked. I'm not able, like I said, I'm unable to manage my life and haven't worked in a significant amount of time. In your opinion, if a person such as myself who has a significant degree of, I guess, almost like, what's the word, not atypical, subclinical cognitive challenges, because they almost can't even measure it. Do you think that if one were to incorporate a number of these alternative modalities or complementary modalities and do things like the brain training and the diet, I'm so on top of a lot of this stuff already. I'm very proud of myself through my own research. I mean, and absolutely the hormonal issue, especially for women who are aging and things of that nature. Do you think that the powers that be that are affiliated with the Social Security would now regard me or persons like myself as no longer having a disability because, oh, well, she's all patched up. Look how well you're doing. Because that's a concern.
No, the answer is that you still have a brain injury, and the fact that it's so that you are vulnerable to other brain injuries, so you still considered to be under disability.
Okay, great. That's good.
Important. And I'm going to take three things that you mentioned, I want to get out to everybody. This is very, 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 I want to put this red flag for everybody. Once you've had a brain injury, is to be very, very careful in taking any medications that's going to affect the central nervous system. They're called CNS medications. One of my patients who got better, totally better, and she was back to work. She now got the flu, and I told her about this. I did not tell her husband, and until this day, I still feel badly, and her husband, everybody understands what happened. But she didn't tell her husband this, and she got the flu, and she was throwing up, and they took her to the local hospital here, and they gave her Compazine. And this is on my blog, so you'll see this. And she went in, and she now has dystonia. This is very, very important that I had a stomach problem and they wanted to go put me under for, you know, general anesthesia. No, no, no. I say to them, you want to put me under general anesthesia? If I'm having another brain bleed or it's life and death, we go under general anesthesia. So taking anything that can affect your central nervous system, medication that will affect it. For example, I had a rash from a bacterial infection. I was in the emergency room, and they said, oh, you got a rash. And I said, yeah. And they said, we're going to give you a prednisone. I said, no, 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 no. Did you see my history? That affects your central nervous system. I said, I'm finally functioning. If it's life or death, now I have to qualify. If you're life or death, then you have to take something that's going to affect your central nervous system, yes. But other than that, I'm putting out there, it's in my book, it's on my blog. It is. You have to be aware that medications can make your symptoms worse. It can cause mitochondrial, it can cause dystonia and other injuries. So You know, medications are great, but when you get anything that affects the central nervous system, no, no, no.
Okay,
how's
great.
That for, and the other thing about the other mood part, one of the things about the labileness is misdiagnosed by many, many doctors as bipolar.
Yes.
I've had more of my patients who've been hospitalized for the labileness that because they can't modulate their moods as being diagnosed as bipolar and then being put on, you know, anywhere from lithium to all kinds of stuff. And,
yes.
and we discussed the and to answer one thing more to you, Allie, is that because of the neuroplasticity, every symptom that you are dealing with, there is a method that can help you that's in my book. And then, you know, some people I need to customize it, but this is what I'm saying. The old book has some of the stuff, but the new book has every symptom. And one of the things, there is conventional medicine, like for what you're talking about, there's a cognitive therapist that work that's covered under your insurance. They're so complementary and alternative. So there's the three major areas that I've divided. Plus, I give practical suggestions. So is there anything else on that, Allie?
No, actually, we've got just a couple other quickies. But before we
okay,
do,
go
give me one of your Facebook. I've got the Facebook up, but give me one of your sites on Facebook.
I think
they can
one
check
is
out.
Diane Roberts Stoller, I think, or Diane neuropsychologist Diane Stoller, neuropsychologist, and the other one's Diane Stoller. Because I have three. One is my personal one, and I can't remember them.
I know, and I've got it on my other computer.
I think it's under Diane Stoller, neuropsychologist.
I think it might be Dr. Diane.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Can't remember right now.
Okay. This is area code 803. This is our Southern gentleman, Les Paul Morgan. Meet Dr. Diane.
Well, right now my name is just, wow, you're awesome. I'm so glad to meet you. Last night, I have a show on here too, and Kim, I didn't know the title of your show tonight and how the two tied hand in hand, because I've been looking for professional survivors with that, and talking about them a lot on my show, and Kim has, a lot of us have, and my show last night was titled Professional TBI Survivor, Viewing Yourself and Your Life as a Professional Thriver, is what I was talking about, instead of being lost within yourself for the rest of your life after a traumatic brain injury, as I felt I was when I had first a brain aneurysm, then a brain injury, then a brain aneurysm, then two other brain injuries, and then a total of seven or eight operations on my brain, and not being expected to survive most of them.
Right.
And you're that kind of person. I was posting a lot of messages in the chat rooms saying, I was saying last night that I would love to see all the agencies around the world that support brain injury survivors to have thrivers like you in high-level places in it, because I believe when a survivor speaks and tells their story as you have, you've not only walked the walk, you've lived it. It's burned in your DNA.
Absolutely. I joke with people. I say I'm not only the, you know that advertisement for the hair loss? I say I'm not only the club president,
yeah.
I'm a client.
Oh, boy. I've been typing and texting. I don't know if you have the message board up, but I've been saying home run, all kinds of different things throughout the thing, because I haven't heard a voice that speaks quite the reason of Kim's guest, and Kim, by the way. Kim's an awesome host herself. Her and I work on different things with Brain Injury Radio to try to get people of your caliber on there, because we see people falling through the cracks, and it's
the
cracks are turning into more like giant holes in the earth, and people are falling into them. I was a senior operator in a factory the day I had a massive brain aneurysm and suddenly collapse on the floor and go to the person that lives below the earth and is suddenly seen as non-existent for 17 and a half years, much like Kim for 17. And this brain injury radio thing was started as a power to the people kind of thing.
Absolutely.
A mission statement for survivors that feel disheartened and lost in society is how I say it. This is my personal way of saying it. Kim might have a different way of saying it. But we need people like you that have really walked the walk and talked the talk to spread the news that there is hope after brain injury and survival and care and love and life after traumatic brain injury, because it took me forever to get where I can even talk like I can say what I'm saying. I mean, like you said, people don't even know you have a brain injury. You can walk by and they don't see the pain on the inside. They don't see the hurt that people were walking around with. I believe it was Allie talking about it a while ago, that the terrible pain of not knowing exactly what it is that's missing sometimes, and yet we can sometimes carry on as if we're totally normal human beings. And I believe there's something missing that the professionals and the survivors can meet in the middle. That's what I talked about last night on mine. And Kim was there too. And then she has this beautiful show tonight that is just an absolute home run beyond the sun. And I don't mean to keep going like this, but you got my heart pounding. We need people like you to speak out speaking out. I just want to say thank you so, so much. You're absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
Thanks,
do you have a question
Les
for me, Les?
He doesn't.
Okay.
He might have, but
yeah.
I just cut him off. I'm sorry, you guys. Yeah, just one more person.
And then I'm
going
to turn into a pumpkin out here.
Absolutely. I promised you an hour, and you've been most gracious to be here closer to two. So, Keith Anthony, you're on the line with Dr. Stoller.
Hi, Dr. Stoller. I've enjoying listening to you. You're talking about a lot of things that I tried to tell the doctors 35 years ago, like neuroplasticity. They said, you're mad. That doesn't happen. Just stop it. You know, be quiet. And the trouble with doctors over here is that they don't listen to you. It's not possible to communicate with them. It's like there are different species of people on the planet.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said, I agree with you.
Absolutely. No argument there, Keith Anthony.
We're
that's for sure.
Yeah. I'm a hypnotherapist, and I work in my local hospital. Patients
so am
in
I.
There. You're a hypnotherapist?
Yes, I am. And not only that, I'm a consultant. I train people in hypnosis, and I'm published in the Handbook of Hypnotic Suggestions and Metaphors. Yep.
Uh-huh. I was recently training people at Birkbeck University with Valerie. Do you know Valerie Austin?
Yeah.
You do? Oh, great. So I was working with her, and that was a lot of fun because I was teaching advanced Skypnosis, or remote hypnosis, as I like to call it. So that helps. As you know, it means you can get a client anywhere on the planet.
That's right.
So you won't be needing my services then. You're already a hypnotherapist.
I absolutely been doing that for 37 years.
I've been doing it for 35 because when I had my brain injury, they said to me, you know, as they do, this is as good as it gets. You're never going to recover. Accept and behave. But I never did behave, so I was labelled as a troublesome patient. And I just decided, okay, I know it's impossible, but let's see if we can stretch the limits of that word impossible. And that's how I learned hypnosis. I just determined I was going to do it.
That's
awesome.
Good.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Keith Anthony, so much for calling in. Okay, well, Dr. Diane, there's just one thing I want to read off of your site that I thought was very well done. Your whole site's well done, but I like this catalyst for change. Within each person, within each person shines an inner light that illuminates our path and is the source of hope, illness, trauma, suffering, and grief can diminish the light and shroud hope. I am a catalyst for hope and change, offering a way to rekindle this inner light. And you sure do that. I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Again, I want to remind everybody to check out her site. It's drdiane, drdiane.com. And her original book, Coping with Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, and one that you can pre-order now from her Dr. Diane site, but that will be out on November 5th, called Coping with Concussion and Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, which includes information on sports and blast injuries. But you've just been a fabulous guest. I thank you so much for coming on. I hope we can stay in touch, and I'm sorry I kept you a little later, but you're just a very compelling guest. So,
thank you for inviting me, and I really appreciate this. This is my passion, you know, in trying to get out, and the more people I can talk to, because if one person tonight doesn't take that medication, or one person eats the right food, then this is why we're all living here, right? And this is why you're still around and I'm still around, to help others.
That's right. That's right. And I'm looking forward to purchasing your first book, and I can't wait for the second one to come out. So we'll let you get to bed now, as promised.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you having me. Thank you. Good night.
God bless. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody, that was Dr. Diane Stoller. Again, you can check out her site, drdiane.com. I want to ask anybody, I guess I scheduled the show for 2 hours tonight. I will do an hour of overtime where we'll do some informal chat and play some music, which we haven't done for a while, but you have to call in, otherwise you'll be cut off in 15 minutes. So call in to 424-243-9540. Again, that's 424-243-9540. And make sure you check at Dr. Diane's website. Thank you, Keith, put it in the chat room, and it's www.drdiane.com. Also, if you're interested in concussion and some of this new science going on about the cumulative effects of concussion, do check out the August-September issue, which you can still get, a Brain Injury Journey through Lash Publishing, like eyelash, if you're Googling Lash Publishing. But the website is lapublishing.com. And their cover this time happens to be Concussion from the Playing Field to the Classroom. And there's some great articles in here from a couple guests that'll be coming up. Phil Hostler, ATC, talking about youth sports and young brains needing time to develop. And Play Safe, My New Normal After Concussion by Madeline Uretsky. And, of course, yours truly, who wrote an article in the New Horizons section, Can Anybody Hear Me? And also there was a Veterans Voices article by Shad Mashad, Why Are So Many Veterans Homeless? And they used my Brain Injury Radio program from Final Salute. And that's an organization you might want to check out, finalsalute.org. Some amazing things going on there. And so by all means, check out the magazine. Again, call in to 424-243-9540. I want to thank our Brain Injury Radio sponsor, Gordon Johnson of TBILaw.com, and, of course, Lash Publishing. And I'm really excited this week. I'm just going to take up a few minutes until I play our outro, and then we'll roll into overtime. So everyone stay, and then we'll be unmuting mics and letting anyone talk who wants to. But I'm very excited because not only was I blessed to to have Marilyn Lash approach me about sponsoring this program, but I get to meet her this Friday, and I'm really excited about that. She's going to be here with someone else that I interviewed. In fact, if you go back in the archive, I did interview Marilyn Lash. It was right before she asked about being my sponsor on the show. But also, I did a joint interview by some folks who co-wrote a book, Dr. Kelly Orr and Marshall Waddell. That book was called Wounded Home, Wounded Warrior. And this weekend, October 4th through the 6th here in the Big O in the Heartland, is a program sponsored by our new president of the Brain Injury Association, Peggy Reiser. And some of you probably remember Wild Kingdom, but Mutual of Omaha is also a sponsor of this this weekend's retreat called Hope Beyond the Battle, a weekend to honor, encourage, and support all women connected to a service member. This weekend, they're going to talk about information on PTSD, TBI, STS, and compassion fatigue, introduction and access to resources ready to help you and your family, inspirational tools, and again, another chance for some peer-to-peer support, live and up close. But I should be able to meet this Friday not only Marilyn for lunch, but Peggy, who's in another city of our state Brain Injury Association, for the first time, and hopefully Marshall Waddell, who I interviewed, along with Dr. Kelly Orr, who Dr. Kelly Orr, while Marshall is out doing retreats and speaking all over the country, I'm really pleased to announce that Dr. Kelly Orr is now one of our new hosts, and he just had his first program. He'll be on the fourth Monday of each month in the two-hour platform prior to this one. So that would be, let's see, 5 p.m. Pacific time, Dr. Kelly Orr. And he also is a neuropsychologist, and he comes from another angle. Unlike Dr. Diane, who is a professional neuroscientist, psychologist, who became a survivor, Dr. Orr was a neuropsychologist working with veteran families more than the veterans themselves, an arm's length career of caregiving for 35 years, made big plans for retirement, he and his wife, and unfortunately she had a brain aneurysm, much like mine, Dr. Orr's, Les Paul's, and she has not fared as well. 2001, since 2001, Dr. Orr has been a frontline caregiver at home with his wife, and we're very happy he consented to join us as a new host on Brain Injury Radio. So we're very glad to have him here with us, and I'm looking forward to meeting the ladies and hoping they'll let me into this more than just the meeting and the lunch, but I'd like to spend some time at this conference. They're all folks that are dealing with people like me. I'm not a veteran, but I have been on the other side of the coin that they're talking about, and so I'll be really looking forward to that. I'll make sure to get plenty of rest tomorrow since I'm kind of fried today. We are going to go ahead and have an hour of overtime where we'll discuss Dr. Stoller or any other topic that's on your mind and play a little good music in between because I scheduled the show for 2 hours tonight. So again, kind of sort of last call. Anybody who does want to stay the next hour or have the option of it, call in to 424-243-9540. Again, that's 424-243-9540. Dr. Stoller is just a wonderful lady, I imagine she was a wonderful practitioner to begin with, but now that she's been through the gamut herself with repeated brain traumas, I can't help but think, and Les Paul was talking about it, what an added dimension these professionals must have in their career. They've sat there for a lot of years talking to people like us, but you never really know what it's like. You might hear stories over and over and over, but you never really know what it's like until you've worn those moccasins yourself. And once you have, it's got to take all that book smarts and experience that you've had as a counselor and couple that with the survivor morphing into the thriver and then paying it forward, giving back that which has been given to you and putting information out there in a more dimensional way than I'm sure it was coming out at the beginning of her career. So again, I want to thank Dr. Diane Stoller for being on tonight. And there'll be a couple of other folks that work on her team that are going to be guests on the show in the future. Wish I had my list with me tonight of who my upcoming guests are, but I guess you're just going to have to come back and find out. So for those of you that are leaving, I want to thank you so much for being here tonight and supporting Brain Injury Radio and me, Kim Justice, and my show, Recovery Now. Those of us who are hosts and frequent flyers here at Brain Injury Radio believe that one of the most important tools that you can have in your recovery is peer-to-peer support. And I know for me, I'm honored and more educated and more feeling like maybe I did get picked for the kickball team after all. Since I got to join this group of other survivors thriving to become strivers. So, thrivers. Never mind. Anyway, folks, I'm going to roll us into overtime before I trip on my tongue one more time and go and get a drink. And so, and no, I won't drink the rice with the sake or the potatoes with the vodka. I never knew that, or I would have. There would have been a day in my life I might have been wringing out potatoes for the squeezing out that rice for the extra juice. But I'm going to close the show in the usual way, and that's something that I believe that we all have. And the rest of you stick around, and we'll get you as we roll over the hour. Go and get a drink or take a break. Stretch your legs, 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Something, again, I believe we all have. Check out her website. She's doing great. She launched her career around the time I launched, wrote my book, and that evolved into radio. LeahWest.com. She's from Canada, a little Frenchy Canadian. LeahWest, LeahWest.com. This is Guardian Angel. Thanks so much for everyone who came, who's leaving, and I'll see the rest of you on the other side of the hour. Again, that was Guardian West. Thank you. I mean, I'm sorry, it wasn't. It was Leo West. Leo West with Guardian Angel. I'm sorry, I was just making a, for those of you that are out there, I said I spent a long day in the fresh air out at the zoo today and kind of wore myself out, and so I'm twisting my words a little bit tonight and twisting my stuff. Okay, never mind. One of the things I'm notorious for around here is muting my mic, so I limit the background noise with music and when I'm doing things like getting something to drink, and then the next phenomena happens, which I call something shiny. Gets my attention over here, and then I can't remember whether I remembered to unmute my mic. I do that all the time, and then I was thinking about you guys who have been around here a long time, and all winter when I was doing this, and I don't know where summer went this year, or if we even exactly had one, but thinking about it being October, you know, as we were driving in the convertible today, coming back from the zoo, and it's 86, and I'm thinking, man, we're in October, and then we were looking at the weather, and it's going to be in the 50s over the weekend, and in the 30s at night, going to hit 70, which will be nice on Monday, and then we're kind of on borrowed time for the good weather around here, and I forget what the point of that was. So then it'll be cold again. And the other thing besides muting the mic I'm notorious for around here, you audience will get to catch some of our, couple of our hosts' habits or residuals that we get nailed at, busted at all the time. But I drink a lot of hot tea to keep my voice going, especially in the winter. And I'll go in and turn on the tea kettle, and all of a sudden you all will be hearing the whistle. And so people would type in the chat room last year, oh, it's green tea time for Kim. And I was thinking, oh, man, winter's coming, and it'll be the tea kettle and the mic again pretty soon. So I don't know. I was feeling like the other day when we went to the wildlife park, I was talking about being a risk taker. Because, you know, today was the zoo, you know, and the zoo is the zoo. You're pretty safe there. When I went to the wildlife park, those of you that are friends with me on Facebook and have seen the pictures that I post, I do photography. I had the top down, and we were like right in this bison herd and right with these animals that I was taking pictures of, and I made a comment about being a risk taker. So I was feeling a little spunky in my exhaustion. I don't know, that old feeling, punch drunk. What is it? You're tired and you do stupid stuff sometimes. I did it like that on purpose. But I did this 5-second hiccup. I see the chief is here, so I don't want to make him break a sweat, but I did sign a disclaimer, so if I'm taken away in chains for this 5 seconds, I hope you guys will please bake me a cake and send me a saw. And that's where I am. Yeah. Did you get that? I thought you might. How about you, Les Paul? Did you catch that?
Yes.
It's the law. I can hear the sirens now. I'm going away.
They're coming to get you.
I wonder how much royalty that amounted to.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, that Craig one time said either 10 or 15 seconds of a song can be played, if I'm not mistaken. I hope I'm right about that. I don't remember it.
Yeah, one said it and one retracted it, so I'm not really sure. I had a 15-second, that was a 5-second deal, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm prepared for the 5-second royalty penalty and whatever. In fact, I might even like just do that like 15 times tonight so it can add up to a quarter or something, just for the heck of it. You know, you just can't put me out in the sun and bake my brain all day and get me really tired and exerted and then expect me to come. Good thing I closed my iPad on Dr. Diane's 4 or 5 categories she broke it down to, because that kind of happens to me when I get too tired. If I don't just like fall flat on my face, you know, and be asleep, then I'll sometimes do some goofy things like dress in elephant costumes and dance and take these little 5-minute hiccup bites and just dare the royalty police to come and get me after I've spent all the time getting all these signed permission slips from people. But anyway, so did you enjoy Dr. Stoller tonight, Les?
How can I even put words to that are describable? She's absolutely amazing. She's the kind, and I forgot my question. I was so excited. I felt terrible. I forgot to ask my question when you said, did you have a question? Or she said, did you have a question? My question was, how do we get people like her to work with people like us and we build the ultimate superpower team?
I think that's
the missing link.
And I think you're right, and I agree with you totally, but one of the reasons, and I want to just explain to people a little how I do things, because each host does things a little bit different, and I don't want people to get the wrong idea. What I will say is that during my shows, I keep all the mics muted while I'm doing the interview, because I have a tendency to go off track, and so I'm trying to focus, like, kind of like what I told her, you know, I try to focus on my guest, and it doesn't work very well for me to ping pong ball all over the place. And then when I talk to a guest, particularly from the East Coast, and in answer to your question about the professionals, it's hard enough to get them. But if we get them and you realize they're talking to patients all day and they came to give some information in informative information for us and point us to a variety of different resources, but they're not necessarily having the time to hear our life story during the interview, especially the East Coasters, you know. And so every now and then when I am soliciting a guest, you know, one of the things I say to them, and I mean it in all sincerity, but I violated it every time. So, not meaning to, but it's just the guests, I'm blessed to get some very fascinating guests, and it's hard for me to turn them loose. But, you know, I tell them, I say, an hour, I'll keep you for an hour, and then there'll be a little bit of Q&A time. Well, we didn't even start the Q&A time till almost an hour and a half. And she had mentioned at the beginning, right when she came on, that she was really tired tonight, and the East Coasters and the people in UK, like Keith Anthony, hell, it's 3 or 4 in the morning for them. So, you know, I think that's maybe one of the things we can do to get more of the professionals to come, and that's to keep on point, which is now, you know, in the present. Because, you know, I think a lot of people, I said I was much more of a qualitative person than a quantitative person. A lot of times my observation is that, you know, some of the scientific professionals are more quantitative than qualitative, although I suppose school's out for that if you're in the psych end of things. But I'm going to go ahead and open a couple other mics here for a few minutes and get some comments, and then we'll play a little more music. So, Allie, you're back on, and I'm sorry I couldn't bring you on for the next question. I as a host, it's hard. You want to please the audience, but you don't want to alienate your guest. And so,
no,
it's
I totally
a tight,
understood. Not a problem.
Tightrope. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. No, I understand. Because there's an integrity aspect of hosting as well, because you're right. You want to be gracious and respectful of the time that is being bestowed upon you by your guests. And so without the guests, I'm not going to say there wouldn't be a show, but, you know, they're a big draw for the show. And so, yeah, you got to play to your audience, but you also have to respect and play to the needs of your guests. So I get that.
What was your last question? Maybe the rest of us. I've got Keith Anthony, Les Paul, and me opened up. Do you want to tell us your last question? Maybe we can guess.
Sure. I would love to put it out there. Yeah. And that was just a tremendous interview. I got so much out of it. And I don't know. I'm still sitting here spellbound. And at the end of the show, when you were playing that song about the guardian angels, I had tears streaming down my face because I was truly, you know, touched and moved and inspired. Not to sound cliche, but I really was, because the whole field of possibilities has opened up as a result of hearing this information and knowing that it's been compiled in a book that we can obtain rather inexpensively.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to doing that. Also, yeah, I know, the woman in the song, I can't remember her name, but she was talking about guardian angels. I couldn't hear all the lyrics, but I know what came to mind is, each of us are each of our guardian angels, in my opinion, because you never know where an individual is. You never know what impact your words, a kind gesture of friendship or humor or acknowledgement and understanding can do for another. And I think oftentimes we take for granted those moments of intervention, and oftentimes the person who is being expressive of whatever it is that they're expressing has no idea that their impact is being felt in the way that it is. And I just wanted to put that out there, and I'm just beholding the awareness of it all. Yeah, I really am.
No, I agree with that completely. You know, that's one of the reasons why sometimes, I like to have fun. Part of recovery is that we have to have a sense of humor and we have to have fun, because if we go back to the day where the doctor put their finger in our nose and said, we're never going to improve and, you know, what you get is what you got and all of that kind of thing, then, you know, we wouldn't continue to survive and thrive. So we've got to, you know, we've got to have the humor, but, you know, there's also a lot of information to absorb that's pretty heavy duty, and she talked about the grief process and all of that, and I did have a point based on what you said, but I forgot what it was. Maybe it'll come back to me. So.
I was talking about we each are each other's guardian angels.
Oh, okay. What I was going to say is that about my attitude and where I'm coming from sometimes is that when I think of somebody like me who went 17 years without encountering that I knew of another brain trauma survivor, that you
Same
never
here,
know.
Yeah.
Well, unless for a long time too. And I guess what I'm saying is that we do have to be a little careful sometimes, because if we're the only copy of a fellow survivor that a person sees, and we're conducting ourselves in a certain way and maybe not taking responsibility or blaming it on our brain injury or not feeling compelled to seek further treatment and guidance to improve those deficits we might have been left with, and we're the only copy of recovery another survivor sees, that might not be good news for them if we're not taking part in our own recovery, which doesn't mean going to perfect or going back to who we were, but it means creating a life worth living with the opportunity for some of us, the second or third or fourth opportunity that we've been given. So, you know, sometimes I look at behavior that goes on and I think, it just, you know, if that was the only thing I had ever seen or encountered, I probably wouldn't be left with a real hopeful feeling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so for those of us who don't look like it or seem like it, you know, I don't think we have to do things like drool applesauce or do anything like that. It is one way of making a point, and for some people that's a good way to make the point. But, you know, to other people, I'd just like to get adult validation and not so much the shock jock. There's a place for all of us, you know.
Okay.
That's one of the beauties of Brain Injury Radio, is that we have so many different choices and so many different approaches. But, you know, I was a shock jock and risk taker before I ever got a brain injury. That actually changed me, you know, to want to be taken more seriously. And by being more seriously, I've got to meet them on their level to the best of my ability, and try to communicate something that's very hard to explain to people who haven't been there. And so, like I said, I'm very blessed to get these hosts who do a much better job of it than I do, because I didn't have the experience. So I'm the fisherman of guests who have had that experience. And hopefully, you know, that's something that is helpful for all the listeners out there.
Mm-hmm.
We've got such a plethora of great information out here to be absorbed. And I think of all the time I went, and again, in fairness, in 1995, people didn't have a computer, you know, there wasn't a computer on every desk and all of that business. And you know, we weren't groomed that way. You know, now a lot of people have visual trouble too. You know, a couple of our guests who come regularly to Craig's show, and I know that I get it too. When I'm tired or my eyes have been strained, that's one of the reasons I don't have my Facebook, my Facebook and my email and all the things forwarded to my phone, because I can only really spend a certain amount of time in front of a screen, whether it's a TV screen or a computer screen, or trying to squint to read, you know, the text on my telephone. There's only so much of that I can do, you know. I've learned to not compartmentalize, but I guess to seek balance in my life. And I just can't do too much of one thing, or I wind up being like the mouse in the maze that keeps hitting the wall.
Yeah.
And I need that gentle nudge, you know, to get me, okay, put a quarter in me again, and I'm going through the maze, and I'm doing really good, and then boom, 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 I'm stuck again on that. And that's what I find so refreshing about this is, you know, a lot of this is like looking in the mirror. You know, there was a time in my early recovery when I would look in the mirror, and it was blank. I didn't see a reflection. And, you know, in the last year that I've been doing this, I've seen the reflection time and time and time and time again. So when I quoted that thing off her site under the emotional section, I think it was, of thinking that you're crazy, you know, one of the things I've said often on the show before is that the most dangerous playground for me to be left alone in is the one in my mind, because that's where I'm going to awfulize. That's where I'm going to steep my fear, you know, and I'm going to lead myself down a path that isn't productive, you know. And when I can come in here with other survivors and thrivers who, A, know what I'm talking about, because they've all had their day, you know. But the cool thing about the group is that, you know, we can take up some slack for each other. You know, when a few of us are low, a couple of us are high, and we kind of borrow on each other's energy or play off of each other's energy. And Les Paul, I've heard you say a lot of times, and I felt that way tonight. I felt really sick when I got home from the zoo, and I had to lay down for a couple hours, and then I got up and had that fog brain she was talking about. And the other night, it might have been last night, you know, that you were talking about crawling to the microphone, you know, wondering if we're going to be able to get through our show tonight. And then somehow our show starts and it's like the fire is lit and boom, you know, we're off and running and you know, re-energized with the recovery, you know.
I don't believe I could have done last night's show tonight. Because I'm really exhausted tonight, but I'm not going to leave until this is over because it's too important. But I'll give an example. Our office has moved into another office as of today. In the past few days, we've been moving, and I moved a lot of computers and a heavy server and everything. And at the end of it, I said, oh, boy, I'm tired. And I mean very tired. It was a lot of moving. A lot of us were working to empty out the office as fast as we could, today. And so when I finished, I was like, wow, I felt like I was falling through the floor. I almost fell asleep before your show. And I mean,
I'm glad you didn't.
I almost did. And I said, wait a second, there's something I've got to do. And that was your show. And so I'm so glad I was here because not only was she fantastic, but you are fantastic.
Yes, you are, Kim.
Yeah.
Guys.
It
all right, for that,
perfect.
You guys.
Kim, is my mic on?
Yes, we hear you.
We hear you.
Oh, good. I didn't know I was on.
Yeah, we heard you typing, too. What were you typing? I didn't even see it catch up in the
I've just been typing on Leah West's page, encouraging her to upload her new music to our We Love New Music site on Croydon Radio because we get her some airtime and maybe I'll interview her. Should be nice. Do you think she'd like that?
Not sure.
Mm-hmm.
You can always ask.
Uh-huh.
Well, how are you doing tonight, Keith?
I'm fine. I'm shattered. I really need some sleep because I've been up for about 4 or 5 days now. And I really need to do something about that because it's getting to me. But
it should be.
Yeah,
that's your body
5 days
thing.
Without sleep. How much sleep have you had?
Say again.
This is Allie. I'm saying it should be getting to you 4 or 5 days. Like, how much sleep have you had in 4 or 5 days?
None.
What?
I haven't had any. I've been busy.
You're serious? No sleep at all?
No, I'm really busy. I haven't got time. I've got a noisy neighbor, too.
You know what? And this is kind of what my question was, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the sleep thing. I don't have insomnia, but it seems like, is it Keith? Keith Anthony, that's you, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. It seems like... clearly, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a diagnostician, I can't even, you know, purport to know exactly what you're going through. However, when I heard you say that, there was a chord of resonance within me because if I'm not careful, I will keep my nose to the grindstone and just toil away as if I can't afford to go to sleep because if I don't, then look at all the potential progress I'll miss out on because I'm on such a roll. And part of one of the reasons why I go at it so fervently is because my energy cycles, I don't know if you want to even call them biorhythms, but I'm thinking it has more to do with like the cognitive gas in my tank that I have available to me, oftentimes just tanks. I mean, it's almost like I'm not always aware that my empty light is on, you know, the E on the dashboard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so the thing is, when I continue to go and go and go and push myself, I'm feeling it now, but I'm so glad that I didn't go to bed and miss the show because I saw this as an investment in self, but I'm
Absolutely. Feeling
like I'm getting under the weather. You know how you push yourself to the degree that your immune system starts taking a hit and you're feeling like, uh-oh, I'm not good. Get sick and you're starting to feel a little achy in your, you know, lymph node area.
Yes,
that's
ear. Right. My mind,
I'm feeling that way. Mm-hmm.
My mind is very alert still, but my body is needing a rest. I can feel it's
that's
aching a bit.
That's what I understand. That's what I understand
too.
About you. Yeah, because it happens to me too. And part of the issue is I don't have insomnia, but to the untrained eye, it might look like I'm an insomniac, when in actuality, my brain is so active and there's so many things going on. I get easily stimulated mentally and cognitively. And because there are so many things on my list to be accomplished, whenever something pops in my head, I'm very apt to, just like the shiny ball syndrome Ken was talking about, my mind goes right there, and I'm thinking, if I don't do it now, I'm going to forget. Because
I'm guilty of that myself.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All of my injuries are frontal lobe. And so for me, out of sight truly is out of mind, and it leads me to have stacks and stacks of stuff if I'm not careful, and piles of stuff if I'm not careful. But I have kind of, I have demystified what all of that is. I'm not a hoarder. I'm someone who struggles with chronic disorganization. But because I now have this newfound awareness and understanding and a respect for what is so for me, I'm operating differently in my world, life, and affairs. But this is brand new for me. I don't even have a track record yet. So I'm speaking about all of this, you know, in a very embryonic stage. I don't know how it's going to hatch. I have no idea. But I have faith and belief and hope that it's going to pan out and pay huge dividends. And I'm going on my intuitive knowing here. I just feel and know with every fiber of my being that I'm on the right track, and I'm getting like divine synchronicities all the time that affirm that. And so I feel very good about it. But one of the things that I know works against me is my lack of discipline and my lack of honoring radical self-care for myself. And one of the ways that looks like for me is not honoring my body's need for restorative rest. It's not even about sleep. It's about restorative rest, like Dr. Diane was talking about. And
right.
To the degree that we deny our bodies that opportunity to truly rest and recover and repair, then it's almost like choosing to allow your, like, myelin sheathing to start fraying. You know, we work against ourselves to the point where it's almost like having a sweater that's beautifully knitted and you snag it on something but aren't even aware that it's snagging. You just continue to walk one down, you know, and you go, you know, your sweater is just whittling away. And then you wind up naked, you know, you leave yourself exposed to the elements, and then when that happens, you make yourself vulnerable. We make ourselves vulnerable to catching cold, to other illness. God forbid it turn into pneumonia, and I only say that from a place of, I guess, empathic recognition, you know, from a point of empathy. I'm not waving my finger at you and berating you or anything like that. So I hope you're not receiving it that way. But I'm just hearing in you something that I struggle with, and it's something that I really, really want to turn around, need to turn around, because I can almost promise you, if we don't, you can almost guarantee that you're going to have some major health challenges. I mean, like chronic life altering health challenges, because I often say God will forgive you what you do to your body, but your body won't, and our bodies need rest. And when we don't, we create a situation known as acidosis, and, you know, we really do deplete our bodies, and we are human organisms, and on a cellular level, we break our bodies down, and then they cannot perform for us, and then we set up disease in our bodies. It's a you know, ripe environment for disease to set in. So please be careful and try to turn that around.
Exactly.
I agree. Same thing with the food. Yep. Just like that.
Oh yeah, food is huge. Yeah, definitely. And I'm in the choir loft with you, Keith. I hope you understand that.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Is he there?
Absolutely.
Keith?
I'm here.
Yeah.
I am here.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I
hope you don't feel like
tired.
I'm preaching at you. Yeah, I'm just wanting to shake you into awareness, because you know what? I know for a fact that I was, if I'm not here, and I don't want to claim anything, but I know for a fact that I was literally creating a major health challenge, and it still may be going on, but I'm not claiming it. I'm not claiming it because I just saw that, and I said, well, you know what? If it is something, I'm not even going to get freaked out about it because I'm just going to see that as an opportunity to course correct because I now know what I need to do. And I see that as an opportunity to get it together and to choose not only a new thought, but to walk in a new behavior, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Okay, if you guys hang on for 1 second here, I am going to play some of you saw a picture last weekend. Well, actually, this will be very interesting. Well, I guess it's a week. I think next Wednesday, John Cruise is supposed to be my guest, and he's one of the indie musicians I use on here who sings The Palm of Your Hand. He's got an amazing story, but some of you saw me and Daniel Christian, pictured on the Brain Injury Radio page and my In a Flash page. And this is a song of Daniel Christian's called Picture Me.
By the world or the knowledge that it's given you, even though your heart has lived what others have merely read. But I digress and I confess, there's too much to address in verse, but we'll see where this takes us, navigating through these thoughts about my head. I suspect we can all find joy within the little things, and it seems you may just have spotted hints in me. And even though I don't know, and I disallow you the affirmation, please be advised that I recognize if it comes from you, then there's something to it. Can you see within yourself what I don't see in me? Do you find what we all know is inside of you? Is it possible for us to find self-worth, or is that just an idealistic dream? Open-minded people closed off to the masses' concept of our own value. I wish I could picture me the way you picture me, as a trusted source of faith and substance. If it really is the way you see, then there could still be hope for me. There may exist the rationale for some optimistic confidence. There's common ground between the faithful heart and the logical mind. Beauty in simplicity, detail and complexity. But what is it that we're hoping to find? Just a revelation of a personal kind. I know how you think, and you know how I think. That's how I take away your ammunition. Somehow you dismiss the rhetoric and blank me with press-saving tactics, even without my cooperation. I wish I could picture me the way. if it really is the way you see, then there could still be hope for me. There may exist a rationale for some optimistic confidence.
That was my good friend Daniel Christian, danielchristianmusic.com, or facebook.com/danielchristianmusic. You might tell him you like him and you heard him on Brain Injury Radio, and thanks for letting Kim play his music. Oh, no. Let's see. I feel that hiccup coming on again.
Somewhere in middle America.
So, can you guys guess what part of the country I'm from tonight? This is funny. I can amuse me because you guys are momentarily muted, although I know some of you can sneak in. And I'll be right back to let you to put your mics on. But I thought I'd give one of the ladies a chance. Well, let's see, we've had a lady and a fella. But I don't know, people up in your area, Craig, there's some Seahawk fans. I don't know a lot about sports, but I think they're one that belongs to your state. And this lady here is one of our fun favorites, and you guys probably also saw a picture of my husband and I posed in our new Ari hoodies, and so I'm going to play you guys a song. This is one of my favorites of hers, but I've been playing quite a few new ones lately. This is Ari Moore, and I'll put it in the chat, but it's A-U-R-Y-M-O-O-R-E. AriMoreBand.com or Facebook.com/AriMoreBand. Really fun, big heart, dynamite talent. Stay with me.
I need a friend, someone to help my mind and brain. Stay with me, the night is cold, my heart is weak, but my fear is bold. Cover me, hold me tight. No need for love, just get me through the night. Just stay a while, watch me save. I just need for you to stay with me. Stay with me, I want as much. But if I tremble, let me feel your touch. Stay with me. Help me unwind the conversation twisting in my mind. Cover me. Yeah.
just get me through the night. Stay a while, watch me sleep. I just need for you to stay with me. Yeah, stay with me. I'm different here.
Again, that was Ari Moore, and she's got some serious music pedigree behind her. Her sister, Pam, spent a lot of years as Sister Mary in Queensryche, and Berlin, I think, is a cousin, and a good friend is a guitarist in Yes, so she's definitely had a lot of help, a lot of leg up, but obviously has some wonderful talent of her own. I think what I'm going to do is unmute you guys and tell you all good night and thank you for being here, because we've got about 15 minutes left in the show, maybe 10. And hi, Les Paul, Keith Anthony.
Hello.
And you're on. And Allie, you guys are all on. I just wanted to thank you guys for being here and participating in the show tonight. As you other hosts know, we appreciate it, having people here so we're not talking to ourselves. And I appreciate you guys being here tonight.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. This has just been quite an informative night. I feel very full and encouraged and excited and humbled and just, I mean, it spans the gamut. So many different things, but it's all positive. So.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really nice thing to have you join our group and become one of the regulars.
Yes.
So
it's you.
Been
nice to
very,
be
very refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So are you all, really. You know, and that was another thing that was part of the tears. My heart is so full, and I am just truly grateful, very sincerely grateful for just having even connected with such awesomeness and you all in this Blog Talk Radio format, the Brain, what is it, TBI Survivor Network. It's just opened up a whole new avenue of resources and connections with people, and I'm very appreciative of that, and totally did not see that on the horizon. I intuited it. You know, I knew it was on its way. I didn't know how it would show up, but I'm just wanting to thank you all for being your awesome selves and for embracing me as you have, and just wanted to let you know how much I appreciate you. So thank you again.
Oh, you're welcome, and we appreciate you too. Thanks.
Yeah,
Keith Anthony.
Thank you.
Seems like you're part of the family.
Yep,
yes,
part
Kim,
of the family.
You're doing a fabulous show.
Oh, well, thank you. I just wanted
to
thank
right?
you for... that was exactly what you were supposed to say. I had the cue card up, and you read it.
Turn cuffs off now, then.
I'm hoping your flu is better and that you'll be able
better.
To get
yes,
some
it's
sleep.
It's gone, I think. Gone completely, really. And my voice is back, as you can hear.
Yep, just in time for Saturday night. Let's see, tomorrow we have Fantastic Frank. Friday is Kevin Phillips, WTF. Saturday night is Keith Anthony, Hypnotic Recovery. Although you're going by Sensei now, are you Sensei?
Yeah.
Hypnotic Recovery?
Hypnosis Sensei, which means teacher. Do you like that title or that change?
I do. I like that title.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I shall be on stage tomorrow. I get really nervous when I stand on stage because I have to look into people's eyes.
I get that. You doing a talk tomorrow?
Not exactly. We're supporting Oxfam with the Crocs Jam Festival in Croydon. So we're having hundreds of bands, and I'm going to be on at different venues over the next four nights. So I'm going to be compere tomorrow evening to introduce the bands.
Oh, that sounds super fun. We'll have a good time
yes,
with
it
that.
Does.
I've never done that before, but it can't be that. How hard can it be?
No, and it'll be fun to do. You won't have to think real hard about it. It'll just be fun. Well, good luck with that. That sounds like a really cool experience. Wish I could be there with you.
It'll be
good. In fact, I'm hoping it won't be too noisy because I think they're more folky groups than anything. A bit like Leah West, not too racy, which is good.
Yeah, I like that too. Well, again, thanks for being here, and we'll look forward to seeing you on Saturday night, and good luck tomorrow.
Yeah, I should be having, I'm hoping, Winsome Benjamin on Saturday.
Good. I'll be looking forward to hearing her. It's been a while
and
since we've had a chance to talk.
I've been trying to get a friend of Oprah Winfrey to come on. Which I hope I do.
Well, bring them on. We'll be looking forward to it. And I see, Les Paul, you've been typing in the chat room, musictherapy.org. Les Paul and I, among perhaps others, find music be therapeutic. And that's one of the things I chose to do in the platform of my show, is spend the first half with a guest or a topic, and then Q&A, and then some general talk, and I like to do some music with some what I think are great heartfelt indie artists toward the end. And so I know that you came back from a coma to yesterday and are a Beatle lover and also a lover of music therapy. So you were talking about the American Music Therapy Association and the healing power of music. And if you're out there, you're into that, look around your medical practitioners, or just go directly to the American Music Therapy Association, and they might have a list of places where they have a list of places where
yes, there's over 1,500 in the United States alone. And I haven't told you something really cool about music therapy that's happening for my girlfriend. This happened very recently. She's seeing a music therapist. And where she goes to a doctor's office at this big hospital you hear me talk about in Augusta, Georgia so often, well, she saw they had a music therapist one day when we were going through there, and I didn't see it. I didn't know they had one, and they told us they didn't have one. One had just come in, and so she's already taken a session. I bought her an acoustic guitar for Christmas about 2 ago, and he's having her bring her acoustic guitar and teaching her guitar lessons and showing how the music therapy can help heal the brain. And the music therapists work directly on brain therapy and beats and rhythms that help the timing of the brain. And she says, Les Paul, he's amazing. Wow. And so they go after the music that, like, say, whatever your favorite music is. They'll ask you, Kim, okay, mm-hmm. who's your favorite artist? What's your favorite tune what's your favorite drum beat, all the different things, and they'll bring instruments in. And he learned one of her favorite songs on guitar and came in and taught her how to play it some. And she's new to the guitar, so she doesn't know how to play it well. But he played the song for her. He practiced the entire song. It was one of Elton John's songs. They're really, really cool people. They're like musicians. You know, musicians have a cool about living life, and they usually are a musician, but they're board-certified trained musicians who help people with traumatic brain injury and other disabilities. It's amazing.
Right. Well, thank you for mentioning that. And again, thank you for being here tonight. I'm glad that Andrew is having that experience.
Well, your
Very
show has
cool.
been absolutely fantastic tonight.
Well, thank you. And tomorrow, let's see, I don't remember what, it's the first, so is it going to be in the early platform, which would be 5 p.m. Pacific time? Is it going to be Ken Collins tomorrow?
Say that,
Thursday. I'm sorry,
yeah, Thursday.
Okay, so Thursday will be the new Independent Living show, The Empowerment Zone. Les Paul does Thursday and Friday, but some of the pioneers in that industry do the first 2 weeks of the month. Ken Collins is the first. Constance Miller is the second. Make sure to tune in for that. And thank you, Les Paul, for being here tonight. And I think I'm going to, a lot of you know that I'm not only one of the survivors and here to support all other brain trauma survivors, but you also know from a lot of my guests tonight, we had a civilian guest, but that I also have patriotic or veteran guests. And normally, I always play this song is an outro for our veterans. But, you know, there's a lot of kind of heroes in our lives, those that help us come along through the hard patches in our lives, those who are mentors to us, who set that goal that makes us want to reach. And I've got to say that since I've been here, you guys have become my heroes. So my outro tonight to all of you and dedication is by Chris Dukes. And this is Heroes. Good night, everybody. Thank you for coming. Happy thoughts. Many blessings. See you next week. And you're my heroes.
tomato rolls. You're my brothers and my sisters standing up against the cold. My heroes.